is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd, sometimes people say that I'm a contrarian. I don't agree with that. I think I am a realist. I think I keep it real. I think I tell it how it is. And I think sometimes the truth just hurts. And so people want to ignore the truth, and I'm just here to bring the truth, and that's all I do. That's why I feel like I have a couple of nicknames. I think one of them should be the problem child, because they don't want me, but they have to have me, because I just tell it like it is sometimes. And so everybody's got this belief out there that I just can't get on board with. And it surrounds Tua Tagovailoa. Mel Kiper Jr. has Tua at number 3 in his latest mock draft to the Detroit Lions. Mel is all about Tua. David Carr, I have in front of me, the former NFL quarterback, now on NFL Network, has the 10 best quarterbacks to add in the free agency or the draft. Now, I have no idea how David Carr came up with this list, because he's got Joe Burrow at 3 on this list, and he's got Tom Brady at 5. So I don't know how Joe Burrow can be at 3 and Brady can be at 5. And he's got Mariota at 8 and Tannehill at 9. So I don't know how you can have Tannehill at 9 and Mariota at 8, when I think everybody would say that Tannehill, as of right now, is the far superior player. But, again, it's David Carr's list, not mine. His number one available quarterback is Tua Tagovailoa. And he writes this, quote, "If Tua continues to stay on track with his health, like his most recent CT scan on his fractured hip revealed, I have no doubt that he's the best quarterback of this group right now. He's a solid pocket passer and an elite scrambler." I feel like I want to dissect every line that he writes in this, but we'll read it all at full and then we'll go. Carr writes, quote, "I've seen him extend plays with his legs, but also make them with his arm when scrambling. By keeping his eyes down the field, he plays a lot like Russell Wilson. Tua has an explosive lower body, near-perfect mechanics in his throwing motion, and a super quick release. He has tools to make some dynamic plays and elevate any offense. The one question is his health." Okay, let's stop it right there. Before we even get into the health thing, which is, I think, significant as far as Tua is concerned. I'm not just going to say that because they came out and said that the doctors said that Tua's hip looks good on the CT scan. I'm not going to take that as gospel. Like, did I have an independent doctor on SportsCenter take that CT scan and analyze it for me? Because until I see that, then all I know is what Tua's camp is telling people, which may be true, may not be true. I don't know. But the other thing is this. How can I cannot get behind Tua like everybody else can. Does Tua have a good arm? Of course. He's got a great arm. He can throw the ball. He had the best offensive line in college, the best wide receivers in college. He had at least 2, maybe 3 first-round wide receivers, and he has like 2 first-round running backs. How am I supposed to know if Tua goes to the crappy Detroit Lions at 3 that he's going to be the same player when he doesn't have the best players on his team? I mean, you use that all the time when it came to Steve McNair versus Kerry Collins. And it was, what if you put Steve McNair at Penn State with Kajana Carter and O.J. McDuffie, as opposed to Kerry Collins and put him at Alcorn State where he doesn't have Kajana Carter or O.J. McDuffie? Tua, to me, is too small. He's not as athletic enough to be a scrambler. Like, he's not Lamar Jackson. He's not the most accurate passer I've ever seen in college. He's too frail. He gets hurt all the time. I'm not sold that I would take Tua at 3. I'm also not sold that Tua is as good of a quarterback as everybody makes him out to be.
Well, I mean, and we haven't gotten extensively into this, but I think this quarterback class, short of Burrow, is a little bit questionable. I mean, this is not a great quarterback class. Mm-hmm. Now, with the exception of Burrow, again, I think he is the real deal. But other than that, I mean, there are going to be questions about all of these guys that are left. They're either going to be, you know, too slow, too big, doesn't scramble, scrambles too much, whatever the case might be. I mean, the simple fact for me, and the overwhelming fact for me are the injuries. And I am just, I mean, I would be scared to death.
You hate injuries, especially this injury.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like any of this. These injuries, and people try to play off the injury like it's, well, it was a broken bone. Okay. What does that mean? I mean, he missed time, right? He wasn't there. He was injured. Yes. Okay. Thank you. You know, I mean, I don't care what the injury is. If you have a number of injuries, you have to be concerned because, you know what, you're missing time. And as you will hear everybody say, the most important ability out there is dependability.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't depend on your quarterback being there for a bunch of the time, I mean, this is not the NFL team. Wherever he ends up is not going to be Alabama, where, you know, there'll be another quarterback come in and they'll turn around and hand it to Derrick Henry and he'll gain 200 yards and we're going to win anyway. Well, there's no other, you know, wherever he ends up, the NFL team is going to be.
He had better receivers this year than he will next year.
Yeah, struggling to just be on the team, let alone be a great player like they probably have in Alabama. So he's not going to be able to, or the team's not going to be able to rely on that.
And then I even avoided the injury part before kind of giving my whole spiel on Tua. But the injury thing is my number one concern. And that is the guy has never made it through a season healthy. So what makes you think where he's not going to have the best offensive line and the guys are bigger, faster, stronger, and hit harder that he's going to make it through these seasons in the NFL? And then the other part of that is, again, his offensive line at Alabama is better than every defensive line that he plays. His receivers at Alabama are better than everybody else's receivers, including LSU's. His running backs at Alabama are as good as they get. So I know that Tua, in two seasons, did not win the national championship either season at Alabama, didn't stay healthy for the entire year, and had a leg up on almost the entire
and it seems like,
competition.
Seems like the injuries are getting worse. You know, the first one was a high ankle sprain or something.
Right.
Oh, okay. And then the next one was a knee, and we got that, whatever happened. And then, of course, the hip. And the hip is a scary deal.
And I think it's a tough spot to be in as a general manager to evaluate these quarterbacks because Tua has all these great players around him. And then you have to compare that to, say, like last year, Daniel Jones at Duke. Like, you have to compare what Daniel Jones at Duke does to what Dwayne Haskins at Ohio State, where he's got all the offensive linemen, all the running backs, all the receivers. Okay, and what's Dwayne Haskins doing compared to what Daniel Jones is doing with a team of guys that are going to go leave practice and go study? Like, what's Daniel Jones doing? And I think that's really, really hard to do. I just was never blown away by Tua with all of the advantages that he had, and then you lump the injury factor on there? No, thank you. I don't even like Justin Herbert, but I think I would take him before I would take Tua simply because Tua played 2 years as a starter at Alabama, did not win a single SEC championship game. Because Jalen Hurts came in relief of Tua and won the first one, and then they didn't even make it to the second one because Joe Burrow and LSU beat him. So this guy's got all the advantages and doesn't win a single SEC championship game, and this guy is now, as an injury risk as he already is going to go into the NFL and succeed?
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be, if you're making the decision, pulling the lever, it's got to be tough. Here's what happens, is you look at it and you say, okay, you've got Burrow, we're not going to be able to get Burrow. Okay, fine. Who's next? Tua's next. Okay, what about Tua? Well, now you start going through and reading and thinking and you know, all the injuries, you say, okay, who is next? And you go down, you know, the list where, however you have them stacked, and you get down about three or four guys, now you're in the second round. You're going, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know what? We got none of these guys fit. I mean, so then you're back to Tua. Then it's back to, okay, can I talk myself into Tua? Can I be convinced about the injuries? Can I be? And that's what will happen with whoever's got next, you know, if they think Tua is the next guy.
So let's take your calls on Tua, 615-737-1025. And if you believe Tua's going to be a good NFL quarterback, I don't see it. I simply, and it's not that if he wasn't hurt, I would still have my reservations about him. The him being hurt totally takes the cake. The consistency of him getting hurt. We'll take your calls and your texts, 615-737-1025. What does Floyd like about Tua as a pro prospect, though? We'll get to that coming up next, plus what Mel Kiper Jr. had to say when he put Tua in as the third player off of his board in his latest mock draft. Jared and the GM live from the wholesaling studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Yeah, Todd and I have an unwritten rule. You can't project trades, but you can also put guys where they could be slotted and where it makes sense. And Jeff Okuda, the cornerback of Ohio State, you think three to the Lions, four to the Giants. If you think about quarterback for Detroit, Matthew Stafford's situation with the money, will they trade him, will he not? But if you want to get Tua, and you know Miami's sitting at five, and you're the Chargers at six, or Carolina, if you want to jump up, you're the Raiders at coming up at that spot at 12. If you're the Indianapolis Colts at 13, and you want to move up, that's the hot spot. So if the Lions don't take him, they want to move out. I think they'll get opportunities. They want to take him as a future heir apparent to Stafford. Because remember, he may have to medically redshirt as a rookie anyway. That's a possibility there. So I think if the medical is good for Tua, guys, I think he's the hot prospect April 23rd. If the medical is so-so, it's a different ballgame. Let's be optimistic about it. Assume everything's good. I think he's going to go in the top five.
That was Mel Kiper Jr. talking on ESPN about Tua at number three to the Lions in his latest mock draft. We know the negative with Tua, right? The injury.
Right.
And you heard Mel at the end of that say, let's just assume everything's good. I think Tua's a hot prospect. I also think you and I will agree the quarterbacks will go faster than even we think they will go in the draft.
Every year they do.
Jacob Eason is ranked 24th in Mel's latest mock draft. He's got Jacob Eason, the Washington quarterback, formerly of Georgia. He has Jacob Eason going to the New England Patriots at 24. We could see a run at quarterbacks and Eason go at 9 before Jerry Jeudy, who is a much better player than Jacob Eason. We could see that happen because that's how quarterbacks go in the draft. So I don't think there's any doubt in my mind. Tua will be a high draft pick this year.
Right.
Injury history, regardless, whatever. What are the pros about drafting Tua? I told you the cons, that he had better competition at Alabama and still, by Alabama standards, didn't do a ton, and he's always hurt. What are the pros to where you say, you know what, though? Tua does have this that could make him successful.
Yeah, he throws a nice ball. He does have a good throwing motion. He's athletic. I wouldn't call him a runner or scrambler. I think he's going to be move well enough to be effective. But I don't see him.
He's not Lamar Jackson.
No, not anywhere in that atmosphere. I think he's pretty smart. The team seems to like him, all that kind of stuff. He's got a quick release. I think his accuracy long, the little bit I've seen, is okay. The accuracy intermediate and short is pretty good. So I think he'd be fine there. You know, he's not a real big guy, not a real tall guy, and that may be a factor. I don't know how well he reads coverages and knows where to put the ball as much as I think he sees the guys that are open. I mean, I rely a lot on Gary Danielson and what he said when we saw him down at the SEC press day. That, you know, I mean, he was just so very, very impressed with him. So I kind of rely on that as much as anything else because Gary's seen him a heck of a lot more than I have.
What do you think, though, of the fact that he played with better players at Alabama? Like, would that be a concern to you? Because
no. Simply because there's no, I don't know how you can grade that. I don't know. And the truth is, every one of these quarterbacks we're talking about are all played with a good team, you know.
Except guy, Jordan Love at Utah State.
Yeah, well, Utah State had the best year they've had in a while. Now, there's a kid at Oregon State that is not a first-round guy, I don't think. And Oregon State has been shaky. But, I mean, Oregon was pretty good. And, you know, I mean, it's like next year we'll be talking about a different guy. But Clemson's pretty good. And, you know, I think that generally speaking – that's why people were so shocked when we drafted McNair. was because he truly was not only from a program that was down the line a little bit, but, you know, they had their success had been only with Steve. You know, they were not a high octane football producing school.
No, they weren't. But I think the thing about McNair too that's tough is the fact that you knew that it was going to be a couple years before he was ready. I mean, if you draft Tua, he's not going to throw at a pro day, right?
I don't know.
He's definitely not going to do any of the testing or anything like that at the combine.
I wouldn't think at all.
So, if the only tape you have is, or the only thing you have is the tape, I mean, I think you're in trouble. Like, how do you grade that? Like, you can grade the tape, but you don't know if the guy's fast at all or not. But if the guy runs a 40, then you know if he's fast. If the guy throws to receivers that he doesn't know at the combine, then you can get a sense of how he throws when it's not Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy and Jalen Waddle and all of those great receivers that they have at Alabama. Like, that, I have such a hard time because if you draft Tua, you will be assuming so much will go right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of questions you got to answer.
And I don't feel good about assuming with the third overall pick.
No. But, I mean, you're going to be, that's what I'm saying, other than Burrow's, and I'm sure there's some assuming there.
Well, I heard Mel Kiper say yesterday that Burrow walked into the year graded as a sixth-round pick, and now all of a sudden he's the number one pick? Hell, how do you make up that much?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm Jared Stillman, and I like to think that I work out all the time, and I like to think that I'm somewhat okay in terms of, like, health. I am not an Olympic sprinter, but if next year, if I became an Olympic sprinter, someone would say, what happened to Jared Stillman, and how did he go from being Jared Stillman at 210 pounds to being an Olympic sprinter?
And I think, you know, with these guys, the problem is going to be just what I said before, which is, okay, now you go to who's next on the line. You know, who's next? Is the kid at Oregon next?
Herbert.
Okay, what about him? You know, now you go through and you start listing the things you don't like about him. You know, he's not real natural. He's done, you know, I'm not sure his intangibles are great. He's a big kid. He's very athletic. So, you know, by the time you whittle it all down, you get down and you say, well, I'm not crazy about any one of those guys, then you're right back to Tua. You're saying, okay, then let's look at this guy again and go over it. You know, well, are you willing to accept the fact? Doctors say he's fine. And the medical people will carry a lot of clout on this choice because the medical people, and I'm assuming most people do it the way we do. I mean, they'll give him a grade. And if he's a bad grade, I mean, I don't think you can draft him.
Is there a chance we could see Tua slide all night on draft night? If it, like, let's say that now, again, it came out that the doctor said that his CT scan with his hip, then it was a positive or whatever, but I know that I didn't see that CT scan, and I don't think, you know, if you were my doctor and you were going to talk to someone about how my scan looked and I had millions of dollars on the line, you sure as heck better.
Those doctors
go
at
out
the combine,
tell me that it's good when it gets to like your doctor better tell you what he sees, not what you want to hear.
Yeah, they will X-ray, they will CAT scan, they will CT, they will, I don't even know all the things you'll use, but they will double, triple, quadruple that hip.
Is there a chance that we see a giant slide? Wasn't Montez Sweat this way last year where everybody thought Sweat from Mississippi State was going to be like a top 10, top 15 pick, and then it came out like at the combine maybe that Sweat had a heart issue, and then Sweat fell, and then it came back that Sweat didn't have a heart issue, and then Sweat fell all the way, even past the Titans. When they got to 19, we thought the Titans were going to take Montez Sweat, not the other injured guy, Jeffrey Simmons. I mean, I do worry that what if we get to draft day and all of a sudden Tua just starts sliding down the board? I do think something like that would get out before we see the slide, so we would know when the slide happens why it was happening. Not Mel Kiper says Tua goes third, and then we're standing there at 27, and we're like, where is Tua going?
No, they'll get wind of that before, and they'll change their boards. You know, the draft board 7.0 will have him at 31 or something.
Although, Cleveland Farrell went fourth overall to Oakland, and I think he was 29th overall last year in Mel's final mock draft. I had Mel's. I got Mel's current mock. I'll pull up Mel's final mock draft on the day before the draft. Let's see, Mel Kiper. So I do wonder what Mel thought at the end. Here we go. Mel Kiper on 425. So Chase sent this to me. This is Mel's last draft, Mel and Todd. I think this is McShay. Whatever. Same difference. Kyler, number one, yes. Bosa, number two, yes. Quinnen Williams, three, yes. Ed Oliver, four, he went nine. Josh Allen, five, I believe he went seven. Devin White, LSU, six, he went five. Hockenson at seven, he went eight. Jawan Taylor at nine to Buffalo, went in the second round. So they got the ninth overall pick in their final mock draft going in the second round, which means multiple teams passed on Jawan Taylor twice, and they had Jawan Taylor as a top 10 pick. Devin Bush did go at 10. Trying to see if any of these are like, knock your socks off, I can't believe. Cody Ford at 14, he went in the second round. So these mock drafts are what they are. Drew Locke went in the second round. They had him at 17. They had the Titans taking Hollywood Brown at 19. Hollywood Brown would be nice. Get rid of Corey Davis and put Hollywood Brown out there. But it's just kind of crazy how these mock drafts, and they're talking to people, and yet Cleveland Farrell, 26 overall to Indianapolis, goes fourth overall in the draft. So the day before the draft, these guys are saying Cleveland Farrell, 26, and Cleveland Farrell goes four. So a lot of these teams keep a lot of this stuff secret. I do wonder what teams are okay with letting out and what other stuff is just totally deceptive.
Well, yeah. And the key is who you're letting it out to. You know, that's the single most important thing. And generally speaking, I think anybody that does one of these shows or does one of these drafts or does, you know, probably...
You're talking about the Mels and the Todds?
Yeah, probably doesn't get the greatest of all info compared to...
I've heard Mel say that like 75% of what he says, what he hears is total garbage. One of the hardest parts of Mel's job is to decipher what is real
absolutely.
And what's not.
Because people are afraid to tell him what's real. Because they know it's going to be out there immediately. You know? So that's why people, you know, 90% of the people that give them info are giving them the info they want to give them, which is for a purpose more of a purpose than being correct. It's for, you know, help me.
Did you ever, what were your conversations before the draft with Mel Kiper like?
I didn't, you know, not much. I mean,
I will say this. I don't think that you gave a lot of these guys a lot of nuggets of information, but I also think you didn't throw them a lot of curveballs.
I didn't. I mean, before I just out and out lie to them.
I mean, I'm sure you did throw them some curveballs.
I would, you know, just tell them I can't go there. Or I'm not going to go there or whatever.
Was there ever a time where out and out lying was something that you felt like you had to do?
To
protect something you wanted?
I mean, out and out lie. I mean, the thing, if I was going to draft a quarterback and I was going to draft Tua, and I was afraid that Cincinnati was going to take him number one, you know, then I might mess with that a little bit to see if I could get them to pass him, you know. Well, our doctors flunked him on the physical. Did they really? Yeah. Don't say anything. But, you know. And then all of a sudden that's, how long do you think it would take that for it to catch fire and go through the draft world?
Ian, what do you think? Do you think Floyd outright lied to the media a lot? Or do you think Floyd...
A lot? No.
See, I don't think Floyd told him a lot, and I don't think he lied a lot. I do think he told every now and then, and I do think he lied every now and then. But I don't think it was over... Like, I think some GMs that probably talk to these guys every day.
It could. Our doctors could have failed him.
Bull blank.
No. I mean, they sure. If they gave him anything other than an A-plus grade... I mean, you can misconstrue fail.
So Floyd originally told us about how he would lie and is now lying about how he lied. I mean, you really are something now. I mean, I tell you what. Now, I mean, this, you're my guy, but that's, I mean, great. You are really just... 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. I do believe I know something the Preds are missing, and it ain't good. We'll get to it next. Jared and the GM, ESPN 1025, the game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Here's Svechnikov throwing across for Aho, popping in late. His shot goes wide to the left side. Tipped up onto the board, out to the blue line, and a shot fought down by Saros, and then a follow-up by Aho. He puts it in the net, and at 4:33 of the third period, Carolina goes in front, 4-1.
Well, I think, first of all, I thought Carolina played a strong game. They were certainly ready to compete and battle at the level you need to be able to win. I thought that we played slow tonight. We didn't play fast, and particularly, I thought our offensive intensity tonight was not close to where it needed to be. I thought our decisions on zone entries, when they had numbers back, we were trying to make plays, and they would knock it down and go back the other way, so you don't set yourself up to be able to play in the offensive zone. I thought our forecheck and puck battle level was non-existent. It wasn't anywhere close to where it needs to be of an F1 getting in, getting the stop, getting physical, a second man quick, maintaining possession. When we did do that, we just threw the puck away. We didn't have poise and composure with the puck, so... that was a big issue. It was a lot of reaching for pucks, slow, and that's why we didn't generate anything in the offensive zone. We didn't put them on their heels, and that's something that we'll address with our group tomorrow and make sure that we're better for Friday.
John Hines last night after the Predators lost. Adam Dengen has an article in The Athletic that is titled, an article, "With or Without Ryan Ellis, the Predators Need Help on Defense, But How?" And something I was thinking about, as he writes in his piece, quote, "Ellis's absence has further cemented his importance to the Predators, as evidenced by the fact that he remains second in the NHL in goals above replacement. But it has also made their need for better defensive depth even more apparent. When the Predators traded P.K. Subban last summer, it was understood that their defense would be weaker. With Ellis hurt, the team has been forced to elevate defensemen into roles they're unsuited to play," which is totally true. Yannick Weber was paired with Roman Josi yesterday. When I saw that during the starting lineups, I almost wanted to throw up. But I think the biggest thing, we keep wondering this thing about the Predators, right? That is, this is a team that went to the Cup Final 3 years ago. This is a team that won the President's Trophy 2 years ago. Like, what's wrong with this team from then to... And it's finally hit me. P.K. Subban stinks in New Jersey this year. Stinks. And he made all kinds of excuses. I read a Sportsnet article the other day where P.K. talked about how tough it is to come to a team and then they fire the coach and they fire the GM and it's a young team that's learning how to win and it's basically pointing a finger at everybody but him, right? So P.K. has gone off into everything that everybody worried about P.K. And that is that P.K.'s too into being a celebrity. P.K.'s marrying a celebrity, all these kind of things, and that P.K. basically would lose his focus on hockey, which it sounds like it's happened. And it sounds, from what I've heard, like it happened last year at the end of the year, and that was part of the impetus to get P.K. Subban out of here, and you couple that with the fact that then it opens up the money for Duchesne, and it's basically a no-brainer. But this team is missing a good P.K. Subban. That's what they're missing. That's the difference between the team 2 years ago and the team now. And it's not that if you had the current P.K. Subban on the team that you would be better. It's not that you're missing the current P.K. Subban, but you're missing the P.K. that played in the playoffs in the Cup final year and the P.K. that was, I think, what, third in the Norris Trophy voting in 2018? That's what this team is missing. And you don't just go get another player like that. There is no way for them right now to go find on a trade market, sign a guy, Milwaukee, there is not another P.K. Subban playing hard, focused on hockey in his prime, and that I have determined is what they're missing the most and what the biggest difference between when you look at yourself and say, how can this core team that was in the that won the President's Trophy 2 years ago, how can they be this way right now? That is the missing piece.
Well, yeah.
Because the defense is, especially without Ellis.
But you wanted Duchesne.
But the defense is not that good.
You wanted Duchesne.
Not on this show.
Well, I mean, I don't mean you personally. I'm talking about you, meaning the Preds. The Preds wanted Duchesne. The fans wanted Duchesne.
But did they want Duchesne over what P.K. used to be, or did they want Duchesne over what P.K.
See,
was
here's the, this is the dilemma as a GM that you run into. It's everybody for 3 years. Got to have Duchesne. Got to get him in here. He's the answer. He makes all the difference. He's the big boy forward. He's this, he's that, the other. Well, if you're going after somebody of that caliber, you're going to have to give up something of that caliber. And so, you know, they decided they were going to do it with PK. I mean, so fine. If that's what we got to do to get him, that's what we got to do. And that's what they did. But you can't turn around now and go, well, geez, I wish I had PK back.
Why?
I mean, that's not the way the game's played.
I'm not arguing that PK if you had kept PK Subban, what you would still not be good. Like, you would, if you had kept PK, he would not be good right now. I mean, I think he has completely lost his focus from the NHL. Completely lost his focus. And what I heard was that he was losing his focus last year, and that it did affect that team. And so I'm not arguing, like, PK, what PK was 2 years ago, what he was 3 years ago, he's not that anymore. They need what he was 3 years ago. That's what they're missing, is what PK Subban was 3 years ago. So even if you had kept PK, it's not like I'm sitting here now saying, oh, they should go back and if they could do it again, they should have kept PK, because PK stinks now. So, like, that would not help you. I'm just saying, that's what, when you wonder, how can this team with this core group of guys that went to the Cup final, how can this group be so average compared to what they used to be? It's because they're missing a Norris Trophy contending level defenseman that they just simply don't have anymore.
Well, yeah. I mean, he may have been the best defenseman in the league.
He was the best defender on that Cup final team, that playoff run.
I mean, if you want to, yeah.
And everybody loves Roman Josi, and I'm not taking anything away from him, but I would rank it like this. On that Cup final run, Subban 1, Ekholm 2, Josi 3. That's how good Ekholm played, and that's how good PK was. And people forget about that now because things didn't end greatly with PK. But I just, the more I watch it on defense, I'm like, not only are you missing Ryan Ellis, and I don't even think Ryan Ellis is that good, but not only are you missing Ryan Ellis, but you're missing PK, the good PK, not the PK who played last year who was incredibly inconsistent, but you're missing the good PK Subban. And the more I think about it, you don't just find players like PK Subban. Like,
well,
those players
are not
just out there for you to go get. So there's this sense of, well, how do you go out and replace that? You don't just go get another PK Subban in his prime.
The guy, you know, one of the top defensive guys in the league is not going to be available. He's like one of the best scorers in the league. I mean, I'm sure we would be a much better team if we had, you know, a 40-goal scorer.
Stamkos?
Yeah, anybody, throw a name out there. But guess what? They're not available. You know, you're going to be, you can't get those guys. It's like, I mean, you know, Pekka. If we had Pekka 5 years ago, when did Pekka win the Vezina Trophy?
When he had an elite PK Subban in front of him.
What year was that?
18.
There we go.
2 years ago.
There we go. 2 years ago. If we had Pekka back 2 years ago. You know, I mean, I'm sure all that would differ.
I'm not convinced of that. I am not convinced that if you put Pekka 2 years ago in the net with this team in front of him, well, he certainly wouldn't win the Vezina. But I don't think he would be that much off from what he is this year.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we wouldn't be. I mean, we're talking now about Saros beating him out.
How did Saros play last night? That would not
even have been a conversation 2 years ago.
Well, Saros is 2 years older, not, but how? Yeah. I mean, how'd that play out last night? I mean, I don't blame Saros for the loss last night. I'm just making the point that I think the goaltending is down with both of those guys because the defense in front of them doesn't have an elite PK Subban anymore and Ryan Ellis when healthy in front of them. Like that, I mean, we're talking, PK Subban was an elite player. He was here for 3 years. For one playoff run and one full season, he was an elite level player. And when he was an elite level player, you were legit. And that's what you're missing. And the hard part is there is no answer to go get PK Subban.
No.
There is not another PK Subban that you can just go pluck out of there. And that's where like I really wonder if the defensive woes of this team, I mean, again, they're running Yannick Weber and Jared Tenorti in top but four defensemen. Those guys are minor league. They're third pair minor league guys.
I know, but that was the plan. We were changing. We were going to get, score more points. We were going to, now I don't know where we are now. And I think if I was to say or ask one thing about this team that I think could be a source is that we're caught like in a time warp here. We're a little bit defense. We're a little bit, we're the big boy forwards. We're a little bit of the new coach and him implementing his program. We're a little bit of all that. But I'm not sure that we have a true strong identity. I mean, we just heard the coach go through a whole litany of things that need to be corrected. Well, that's because that whole litany of things that are important to him, he hasn't had time to get those all in, to get those all working the way he wants them to be working. So I think all of those things become an issue and make it harder for everybody, because everybody's trying to do what they think is the best, but I'm not sure everybody's on the same page as to what is the best.
Well, and this team, I don't feel like this team has, I don't feel like this team has, this is just me, like the identity of what they are. Like they know what they want to be, but I don't think they know exactly what they are. So how about this? This is coming from Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter, and I think because Ryan just sent me and said big NFL news, Adam Schefter, ESPN insider Adam Schefter, NFL playoff structure is about to be changed. Under the current CBA, proposal, seven teams from each conference will make the playoffs with only one bye per conference, sources tell ESPN. It would go into effect this upcoming season.
So they're adding a team
and taking
and cutting a bye away.
Yeah, let's take a quick timeout. 615-737-1025. We'll dissect this next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 1025 The Game. But that is the Adam Schefter report that they would add a team into the playoffs and take away a bye. So we'll think about how that would work out. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 1025 The Game. Okay, Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL insider, comes out and says that the NFL is thinking about adding a seventh playoff team. So here, Schefter now has the article up, so I'll read you the article directly from ESPN. Adam Schefter says, if and when a new collective bargaining agreement is finalized, and there is now mounting optimism that it could be done sometime in the next week.
Wow.
It is expected to change.
That's the news.
Oh, yeah, it's done the next week. It is expected to change the NFL's playoff structure as it is currently constituted for next season, league sources tell ESPN. Under the current proposal, it is expected to take effect in the new CBA when it's done. Seven teams from each conference will qualify for the playoffs instead of six. In addition, one team from each conference will receive a first-round bye as opposed to the two that currently do, according to league sources. The changes to the NFL's playoff format would take effect immediately for the 2020 season. Quote, that's been agreed to for a long time, one source said familiar with the CBA talks. There wasn't a lot of disagreement about that issue. Additionally, players on the teams that earn the first round bye will receive postseason pay for that weekend, and that was not the case under the current CBA, which rankled some players. So, and then a follow-up with this in Schefter's article, quote, the new CBA is not done, but there's no term sheet yet. There's still issues being negotiated, but I'd be very surprised if there's not a new CBA for the new league year, the source said. Well, there goes your two tags for Henry and Tannehill.
Well, yeah, it could be a factor. You don't know what's in the new CBA, but...
What do you think of this?
The playoff thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it works out. I don't know. Six, one, half dozen for me.
Cool the Titans to get into the playoffs easier.
The biggest news is the CBA getting done. If that gets done, that is giant news. because that means, you know, some kind of peace. Plus, there'll be some adjustments that we'll have to go through before next year. It'll be interesting to see what they come out with.
So I think there's a lot of things to this new CBA that are going to be interesting. I think one of them, and I think this is the most important one, is the 17th game. And I think the league wants the 17th game just like they want these extra preseason games to add a TV partner. And I think it's ABC. I think ABC wants back in. That's been well documented that ABC wants back into the TV rotation.
Every team for the last 20 years, I mean, every network that drops out says, no, we can't handle it. It's too expensive. It's too this. It's too that. And then within a year or two, they're saying, let me help. Let me in. Please
come back. So here's the theory behind what ABC would do. Is it would be a multi-billion-dollar deal. ABC would get every team's 17th game, which would be played on a neutral site, maybe London. So every team would have to play a game in London or Mexico City or something like that in a neutral site game. You get 8 home, 8 on the road, 1 neutral site game. ABC gets that neutral site game every week. And then they would also put Monday Night Football both on ESPN and ABC. And then ABC probably gets at least 1, maybe 2 of these playoff games each week. If there's 6 playoff games for the wild card weekend in the divisional round, then you could still do your 2 on CBS, 2 on Fox, 2 on ABC, ESPN.
There are the extra games that I was talking about.
Yeah, or 1 game on Fox, 1 game on CBS, and 2 on NBC or something like that. Then they could schedule the day to be like a normal football day where on Saturday and Sunday for the first 2 rounds, you go 12,
noon,
3,
and
7.
Yeah.
And then that's exactly what and the NFL.
Take up the whole weekend.
Just imagine the NFL taking a giant rake and just sticking it and just bringing the money in. Because that alone probably fetches $2 billion a year in revenue, the extra playoff game, and the extra TV package with the 17th game. Now, the players will get their money in this. And I think once the players understand that they'll get more money just to play an extra game, I think they'll all do it. So the players will get their money. But how do we feel about that? And then if it's a London game that starts every week, then they would start they'd start Sunday at 9 o'clock. So yeah. You go Monday, 9 o'clock, Monday, 9, noon, 3, 7. And ABC's got that game. What do we think of that?
I love it. You know me. I mean, that's fine.
I mean, you wouldn't be able to do the pregame show.
I'm not sure how good it is for the league.
I mean, I will say this.
At some point in time, saturation has to become an issue
basketball.
Here. Golly.
Floyd is the worst pregame show co-host to work with if the Titans are playing the 3 o'clock game. If the Titans are playing the noon game, Floyd's a great co-host. But if they're playing the 3 o'clock game, he is the worst co-host to work with because he's always watching the other games. And it's like, hey, who's your pick to click, Floyd? Like, who do we think in this game's? Oh, I was watching Miami over there. They just went for 2. This is the Titans pregame show. But, I mean, the playoff thing, fine. Cool. I used to, like, I'm against the second wild card in baseball. I think I'm okay with it in football for some reason. I'm okay with adding a team in football. There's 32 teams. If you have 14 teams make the league, that's still less than half of your league that makes the playoffs. Whereas all these other sports, except for baseball, just let everybody into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Half the league goes in.
And I'm so sick and tired of that. I mean, we talk about the Predators and, like, how good are the Predators? How good are the Predators not? Like, all these things. Like, half the league makes the playoffs in that sport. And basketball, everybody, if you don't make the playoffs in basketball, you're trying
you're
to lose. We're tanking to get a better pick.
Yeah.
So those things all annoy me anyways. I'm okay with this. Now, you know when I won't be okay with it? Well, Ryan Tannehill leads the Titans at 13-3, and they're playing the first round and the first weekend because they're the 2 seed. As opposed to what it would have been like before in the past. But, again, the Titans have been on the cusp of making the playoffs many times in my life, so I am okay with adding the 7th team into the playoffs. Can we not wait for Tom Brady to retire before we start making drastic changes, though, to football?
There'll be some divisions that have 3 teams in.
Well, there's already ours now. Because every now and then there's the division winner and you get both wild cards out of the same division.
Yeah, not very
that
much.
That does not happen very often. Fairly,
yeah, this would be a lot more common.
But there you go. That's it for us. Preds Insiders is next.